This is a Collider.com audio interview.
How much research did you do into conditions like short-term memory and so on?
Well, has everybody hit record? Where'd you go? There you are.
Yeah.
I did a fair amount of research. I did some reading. My favorite book I read was called A Man with a Shattered World, which was about a veteran coming back from World War II. The guy in that book suffered an injury far more severe than Chris Pratt's. But the more fruitful preparation that I did was just hanging out with different people that had been through similar things to the character. And they were all different. And what I kind of figured out was that they were all individuals, and that trying to put any of them in a box or a category was about as fruitless as trying to put anybody in any box or any category based on any label that you can put anybody on. And that kind of led me to really want to make the character not just a stereotype, not just, okay, here's the disabled young man, but to make him a person.
How much are you like this guy in real life?
Plenty. I get lost all the time. My sense of direction sucks. It does. I remember time real well. I think everybody's mind works really differently. I remember time real well, and I remember space pretty poorly.
What do you like about the character? What appeals to you about him?
That's a good question. What I like is that he doesn't give up. He doesn't quit. I think that's kind of the most charming thing about him, is that even though it's really difficult for him to do a lot of the things that we just take for granted, like waking up in the morning, like following a conversation or driving to work, things that we can do without thinking about them, he has to focus on them real hard. And by the end of the day, he's exhausted because he's had to work really hard. But he doesn't quit, and he continues to try. And I think that's really admirable.
When you talk to some of these people with brain damage, what kind of things did they tell you about the sort of trapped element?
You know, we didn't really talk much about it.
Really?
I wasn't that interested in talking about it. We talked here and there a little bit, but mostly we just hung out. Uh-huh. We talked about music or girls or, you know, anything else I would normally talk about with a buddy.
Oh, okay.
How did that inform your performance, though? The research or just hanging out with these people, what did you get from that? How did that come into how you play the character?
Well, it just kind of osmotically seeps in that way. And it's, I don't know, it's hard to describe because I don't really know exactly how it works when I'm trying to come up with how to play a character. But reading and speaking explicitly about specific character traits, I think, can often lead to being too self-conscious. Whereas just hanging out with somebody and just getting a feel for them and then thinking of them, that, I don't know, that's kind of more what I do. I don't know, in this particular case.
Did you go into some kind of self-imposed isolation before this to just get your head around this guy, and did you have trouble getting out of that?
Yeah, I was pretty depressed after we were done. I mean, like, I really was for a few months. And didn't really stop until I took another job. It was a bit lonely. I mean, we were up in, Winnipeg, which I didn't, you know, and I was with people all the time, and I made really good friends with all the people I was working with, but I didn't speak much with, you know, other people I was close with. Not sure why.
This character, before the accident, he was pretty much, he had a lot of friends in high school, right? He was pretty popular at high school.
Well, that's what makes the character so interesting. Is I almost had to come up with two characters. There's the guy before his accident, and there's a guy after his accident. And you see flashes of the guy, of his old self, come through now and then. And Scott Frank, the director, and I talked a lot about the balance between when to see the little flashes of his old self. Actually did a lot of work, even though he's only in the movie. There's only a few scenes in the movie where you get to see younger Chris before his accident. But I did a lot of work thinking about that other guy, because that's who the present guy is always thinking about.
Well,
What about your physicality? I love the way you walked.
Oh, thanks.
That was really good, that kind of crunching walk. Did you get that from talking to somebody, or?
I got it from walking next to somebody.
Okay.
One of the guys in particular, actually, I tried to snap his walk up directly. And I did ask him about it, actually, and he said that part of how he got hit affected the part of your brain that helps you balance. Mm-hmm. And so he doesn't go up on his toes when he walks so much as his whole foot would hit the ground at once. And it's a little subtle thing that you wouldn't notice unless you were looking for that sort of thing. But yeah, that's what that was.
You seem to be drawn to unconventional teenage roles. Why?
I'm just drawn. Well, Chris isn't a teenager, but
well, young people.
Okay. I just am drawn to good stuff. It's not so much whether it's conventional or not. I mean, The Lookout is quite conventional in a number of ways. It's a classic heist. Does it break with convention? Sure, but I think that's what makes a good work of art is something that, you know, honors certain traditions and breaks with others.
Well, it still breaks with conventions as Mysterious Skin certainly did, and mm-hmm. as Brick did.
Yeah.
It just seems that you're very comfortable in that, those milieus.
Uh-huh. Well, they broke with certain traditions and they followed other traditions, both of those. You know, it's in the oldest tale in the book, The Hooker with the Heart of Gold, and same with the detective story. But, yeah, and they deviate in ways. And I do think that's part of what makes an interesting script, is what traditions it chooses to follow and what traditions it chooses to break with. And if there's a good piece of writing and a filmmaker that inspires me, then that's the kind of part I want to try to get. I don't really so much think about, well, what are the people going to think of this, or is it going to, you know, obey the proper rules? Or I just try to concentrate on whether or not I think it's good.
Did you have a big incident of some kind happen in your life that spun you off in a total different direction? I'm not saying a car wreck, but, you know.
Yeah, I have those every day.
Well, you don't know where you're going all over the place every day.
Try not to.
Okay.
You were just talking about material. What was your initial reaction to Scott's script, and what drew you to him as a filmmaker?
The script drew me to him as a filmmaker. My initial reaction was, I was just damn excited. There's very few good scripts you get through. I read a lot of scripts, and most of them suck. And this one, I was immediately up and pacing around and thinking about things and feeling things. And then I met him, and we immediately started talking about it. He started telling me about how he wanted to shoot it. He started telling me about how he wanted to put guitars in the score. He started, you know, we started talking about issues of responsibility and forgiveness, and I could tell that he was really excited with what he was doing and in love with this baby of his that he had been working on for so long. And that's the kind of thing I want to be involved with. And luckily, I was able to, you know, I auditioned for him too. I was lucky enough to get the part.
Did you have a different relationship with Jeff than you did with Matthew while you were shooting?
That's interesting, yes. I think I really bonded with Jeff in rehearsal. As soon as, like, it was, hi, how are you, and that was all cool, but once we started going over the stuff, the scenes themselves, that's when we really started to feel like I was getting to know him. Matthew, I think I got to know at the bar. inebriated.
Who's a better drinker, you or Matthew?
Matthew.
What about working with Isla?
The sweetest girl. What about working with Isla? Was such the thing about the set was it was a pretty masculine thing. I mean, it's a story about a guy and who was a jock and his roommate's a guy, and it's, you know, a bank robbery of a gang full of guys, and there's guns, and it's a pretty manly movie. And so when Isla would come, It was such a gentle and lovely relief of just to be able to have a female around. It meant so much. And she in particular, she also, she I think she did it on purpose just for kicks, but I would do my best throughout the day to try to not be too articulate, to try to not let my mind go into, I don't know, into too intellectual a place. but she's so sharp, and she would, I think, just to mess with me, she would draw me out, and like, you know, whether it be through a sarcastic remark or through an observant observation about somebody, she would draw me out, and I'd find myself talking how I didn't mean to be talking, and then she'd call me on it and say, "Joseph, you're not retarded enough."
Did she go to the bar with you?
No, no. She wasn't around enough.
What was it like shooting in Winnipeg? Because it was at another press junket, and the journalist was from Winnipeg.
Oh, yeah?
And you said it's kind of a strange place to live.
It seemed cool to me. I mean, I was working the whole time, but I had a great time. There's tons of hockey there, which was perfect because I was playing a hockey player. And I think they're about as enthusiastic about hockey in Winnipeg as anywhere in the entire world. It's like there's minor league rinks on every corner.
Really?
Yeah.
They were saying something about giant mosquitoes or something. You were there when it was cold, right?
Yeah, it was cold.
And worms.
And worms. Worms that roll out of the trees of your car.
Yeah.
What do you have next?
There's another movie called Kill Shot. Get to ride in a blue Cadillac with Mickey Rourke and shoot up 7-Eleven stores. Then there's another one called Stop Loss, made by Kimberly Pierce, who made Boys Don't Cry, and it's about soldiers coming home from Iraq.
Do you play Winter Soldier?
Yeah.
No, that must be, it's definitely a different thing than you've done. What was the feel on that?
It was a hard one. It's hard to be a soldier.
Yeah.
Did you go to boot camp for that?
Yeah, we did a simulated boot camp.
What was that like for you?
It was really rewarding and enlightening and very hard.
Mm-hmm. Did you get yelled at?
A little bit.
That film promises to be controversial when it's released.
You know, I think people will create controversy out of it, and I think most of the people that do will probably not have seen the movie. The movie itself is actually not about a controversial subject. It's about what it's like to be a soldier. It's not about any politics or governments. I think everybody can agree that the guys that are actually going over there and having their lives threatened are some really brave guys that are going through a lot. And that's what the movie's about.
Can you talk about the working with Mickey Rourke? What kind of Mickey were you working with?
Yeah.
That's a question. He was a really great guy. A mentor and a selfless actor and a pro. And he's really good in this movie. If you like Mickey Rourke, if you like Body Heat or Rumblefish or Barfly or Sin City, you're gonna really like this movie. It's a character that fits him real nice.
Is he bathing regularly these days?
Are you?
Yes.
What's your own relationship with hockey? Are you a fan? Are you a good skater?
I've become a fan. I never really used to watch it, and it was funny. There's only a little scene in the movie with hockey in it, and yet I got really into it. I trained much more than anybody asked me to, and it wasn't so much because I wanted to look good for those scenes, although I did. But but it was because for whatever reason it just got me in the mood. It really became a key part of my preparation in the months leading up to playing the character. Just how hard it is. It's probably the most physically demanding sport I've ever played. You're sweating your balls off after you're done with it, and it hurts, and you have to keep going. And that reminds me of Chris. For the same reason, you know, we were talking about it, he doesn't give up, and I think maybe he gets some of that instinct from his athletic past.
Well, why do you think some his high school buddies never stuck with him? Because after the accident, he doesn't seem to have any friends.
Yeah, it's a good question. It's common. You lead a certain life, and then all of a sudden you wake up and you're not that person anymore. Mm-hmm. I think it's really difficult for both the person who's going through it as well as the people around them. And it happens a lot.
So you're saying he also became withdrawn from his friends?
Yeah, I think he probably would have trouble facing him. I think he felt real guilty. You know, it was his fault, and two of his friends die. And I could see having trouble being able to face up to the people he used to know after something like that.
Could you talk a little bit about the transition that you made from when you're working as a kid and as a teenager, and some of the the track that you've taken with the choices that you've made and things like that. It was a conscious decision, wasn't it, to go in the direction you have?
Well, the conscious decision was I wanted to be in good movies. Mm-hmm. And that's what I always wanted to do. But the difference is that when I was young, I was kind of a selfish person. When I was a teenager, I mostly just cared about my own pleasure. And as I grew up, moved out of my parents' house, I moved to New York, I went to college, I quit acting for a while. And I started to feel a connection to the world around me in a way that I hadn't when I was a teenager. And when I started acting again, I wanted the acting to engage with that connection. And whereas when I was younger, I would be really unnerved when anybody would recognize me for something I'd done. Now I'm delighted when someone is, if someone says to me, "Hey, Mysterious Skin, that movie meant a lot to me," or "Brick," or even, "Third Rock from the Sun" makes me laugh. I love that now, whereas when I was younger, I couldn't handle it. So it's kind of, it's changed, the reason I do it has changed, but I still also just do it because it's fun, and it's, and as far as the, the different kinds of roles, as you say, that's just, I'm just really trying to do stuff that I think is good, and those are the jobs that I could get that I thought were good, and...
How much did you bring to this? Scott's obviously an excellent writer, and his dialogue is excellent, but did you bring something to this that wasn't on the page, and was he okay with that? And if so, what example can you give that you brought to
it? I never really said anything that wasn't on the page. Wow. As far as lines go.
Did you take a scene in a different direction or anything?
I don't think so. I mean... No, it was a really good script.
Yeah, he's a good writer.
Yeah.
What about the scenes when you were in there with Jeff Daniels? What about in those scenes? Did the two of you ever ad-lib anything?
No, we didn't ad-lib anything.
What was
especially me and Jeff. That was where the least ad-libs were. Mm-hmm. Because he comes from the theater, Jeff. Mm-hmm. And in the theater, there's a real ethic of saying the script word for word. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's appropriate on a movie set, and sometimes it's not. When the writing is as good as Scott's is, then it's appropriate. And
what was it like working with him, Jeff?
He's such a pro. He's my favorite kind of actor. He's someone who just loves and enjoys the creative process of working out a scene. He kind of reminded me of John Lithgow, and I think they had worked together before, and they both come from the theater. They're both actors. They've both been in a million plays. And they both just know how to make a scene work. Mm-hmm. And it's a pleasure to collaborate with them.
How do you think your writer did in his directing debut?
I think he did perfect. I think he's born to make movies. I think if you just talk with the guy about movies, he's seen so many movies, he knows, he thinks in cinematic stories. That's how his mind works. And it's a good thing he started directing. I think he's going to... And I think his movies are going to keep getting better and better, too.
Was there any... you said you bonded with Matthew at the bar. So was there any hanging out between scenes and that's all you could do up there? Was just like, did you go out for dinner and stuff or stay in your own little world?
There's both. Yeah.
A little both.
Yeah.
When you were reading the script, did you... think that that Chris was going to take the or make the decision that he did, or were you hoping that he made it? Or?
I don't really remember what I thought. Usually when I watch heists or whodunits or crime stuff or read it. It takes me until like the second time that I watch it to really follow the story, because usually the characters are what interest me. which is why so many of the heists nowadays that are kind of more about plot twists and car chases don't interest me that much. I think they're kind of boring. Whereas The Lookout is, the suspense comes from the people that are in the story. And that's what I remember about reading the script first, and that's what I always remember about every time I see the movie. Just each character intrigues me and attracts me, and I'm just curious who they are and why they're doing what they're doing.
In Stop Loss, you worked with Ryan. Are you, I guess, comfortable thinking that maybe 2 years from now, if you continue to do leads in movies, you might end up, you know, I guess, similar paparazzi bait that he is kind of is in his personal life all over the place? Are you trying to avoid that? Maybe, you know, stick to the indie roles, stay out of, you know?
I don't know.
But you did say you hated the recognition factor when you were a teenager.
Yeah, when I was a teenager, I was kind of selfish. I just liked doing the acting for the acting's sake. I would just assume them, like, burn the film after we'd shoot it, just because I enjoyed doing the work. But now, I like it when people see the stuff I've done, because I care about people other than myself, I guess. Or I try to.
Do you have a hard time watching yourself on screen?
Yes.